Hey guys, just before we get started, I wanted to kind of put a swear warning because I realize I do in fact swear a lot, and I just kind of want to make sure if any kiddies are listening that you should probably stop now if unless you're a mature child. And also, I'd like to say, sorry, Mom. Let's get started with the episode.
Long may she reign, presented to you by Aidan Fitzgerald.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Long May She Reign podcast. I'm Aidan, I'm your host for this podcast. So, on the day I'm recording this, which I was supposed to record this yesterday, but I wasn't feeling well, still not feeling too great, but that's an aside, I'm doing this now. It's eclipse day, baby. There are our beautiful moon is going to cross in front of the sun and block out all the light. And I can't look at it because I can't find solar eclipse glasses. Every place I have gone to try and get some, like, physically in person, because I'm, like, scared of ordering fake ones online. They've been sold out, so I'm going to stay in my room with my blinds slightly, like, open, so, like, I can at least see the darkness, like, happen, but, like, I won't be able to directly look at it, because I wasn't able to find solar eclipse glasses, so that sucks for me. Other things, what else happened to me this week? Well, I mean, like, my exams start next week. Isn't that, like, bonkers? How? I have been doing this podcast for almost 4 years. 4 years next week, I believe. Holy shit. I forgot about our anniversary. Oh, no. Oh, my God. Yeah, our anniversary is next week. That's crazy. Anyway, I've been doing this podcast for 4 years, as long as I've been, you know, going to school. And I'm almost done university. Like, how did that happen? Like, I blinked and it was over. I'm not ready to be an adult. I don't think any of us are. But I am personally not ready to be an adult. Like, in any way, I'm not ready to go to a 9-to-5. I was going to say I'm not ready to own my own apartment. I'm not going to be able to own my own apartment. I'm probably going to be living with my parents until I'm 30 because that's the state of the economy. But it's fine. It's fine. I'm going to get through my exams and it's going to be fine. Anyway, enough about me. You're here to hear about the famous women. Today, we are talking about Arsinoe, the second queen of Egypt. Now, Arsinoe is generally not well known. I mean, in the grand scheme of female pharaohs, of course, Cleopatra is the most famous of them all. So a lot of people don't know about Arsinoe, but I came across her a couple years ago while just playing around in Cleopatra's family knot. And Arsinoe came up, and she just seemed like such a fascinating woman. I mean, she kind of set the standard for how Ptolemaic Egyptian queens acted. So she's like kind of what Cleopatra would have based herself on, because no one was doing it like Arsinoe. Arsinoe's story is absolutely fucking bonkers. I mean, I had a headache just trying to do research for this episode because it is just wild. So I hope you guys are excited. Let's get into it. So, Arsinoe II, Queen of Egypt, was born sometime in the year 316 BC in the Egyptian capital of Memphis to Pharaoh Ptolemy I and one of his queens, Berenice I of Egypt. Now, since we do not have a clue what month she was born in, I want to briefly discuss her name, Arsinoe, because Arsinoe is a really cool-sounding name that I have never really come across, except for when we did Cleopatra, because one of her sisters was named Arsinoe, and I was interested in the origins of it, and I thought you guys might want to know more about it, too. So, Arsinoe is a Greek name that combines the two Greek words, Arsis, meaning raised or lifted, and nous, meaning intellect and mind, which put together basically translates to smart or high intellect, which I think is so cool. You know, Greek names are the best. They always have the, like, prettiest, sometimes the most badass meanings. I wish that I had, like, a Greek name, because they know what's up when it comes to naming people cool things. I definitely think this name fits her too, because Arsinoe was one crafty bitch. She knew how to get herself out of tricky situations in the complicated world of Hellenic politics, where you may get murdered any second, which is, you know, basically how people in the Hellenic world live. My hope is that her parents figured she would need a name that means intelligence because they knew she would need it to survive in the ancient world. Speaking of which, let's get into the wild career of Arsinoe's dad and how he met her mom, as well as talking about her classical education and what she may have looked like. Now, before we get into the massive amount of historical context I'm about to give you about Arsinoe's family, I'm just going to give you guys a pre-warning that I am about to tell you guys the story of one of the most dysfunctional families in history. And not only that, one of the most inbred families ever. Like, these guys get the Habsburgs by a fucking mile. The Habsburgs don't even come close. The Ptolemies were the original inbred family. Well, I mean, the Egyptians before the Ptolemies were doing it too, but, like, the Ptolemies are bad. Now, we've talked about the Ptolemies before because this is the same family that will eventually produce the amazing and awesome Cleopatra, but that's 200 years down the line from Arsinoe's story. Now, Arsinoe's story begins with us right back at the top of the family wreath with the founding guy of this dynasty named, you guessed it, Ptolemy, because of course he had to name the dynasty after himself. Now, we have also met our guy Ptolemy before, as we briefly discussed him back when we did episodes on Roxanne of Bactria and, of course, Cleopatra. However, we haven't really gotten a really big chance to spend a lot of time with him outside of, you know, a few brief appearances in a couple of episodes. So, let's meet Arsinoe's dad properly. So, Ptolemy I, nicknamed Soter, which means savior, was born in 367 BC in the Greek kingdom of Macedonia, and it's generally accepted that he was the son of a nobleman named Logis and his wife, Arsinoe. Ptolemy grew up as one of the many bros of this guy who you may or may not have heard of. His name was Alexander. I heard he was pretty great. Anyway, because Ptolemy was so close to the future Alexander the Great as a kid, he got along with many of Alexander's other besties and was taken on the road when Alexander decided he wanted to conquer half the known world in his 20s, which I cannot relate to. I don't think anyone can. I mean, who these days has conquered half the known world in their 20s? I mean, I certainly haven't. I mean, what am I even really doing with my life? Telling you guys funny little stories about funny little women throughout history? Anyway, Ptolemy served as one of Alexander's main bodyguards. He played a huge part in the Afghanistan and India campaigns when Alexander decided that half the known world wasn't good enough for him and he wanted to take over the rest of the world. Ptolemy also participated in the Battle of Issus, commanding troops on the left wing under the authority of Parmenion, who was one of Alexander's dad's bros. Also, weird fact, Ptolemy served as Alexander's food taster, which sounds very selfless of him to risk the possibility of poison for his best bro, but, like, I guess that was, like, a thing that he wanted to do. Or maybe he was asked to do? I don't know. Unfortunately, or maybe fortunately for Ptolemy, Alexander ends up dying very suddenly in 323 BC, which means chaos because Alexander had no designated heir, as we learned in the Roxanne of Bactria episode way, way back. I mean, his wife, our girl Roxana, was pregnant, but that doesn't mean much, even if it had been a boy, which it was. No one wanted to wait for the kid to gain consciousness to be able to rule an empire, so the generals of Alexander, well, at least most of them, decided to start splitting up the empire amongst themselves. Now, technically, at the time, all the generals were named as governors, and I put big quotations over governors, of their respective regions, especially after Alexander's wife, Roxana, had her son, Alexander IV. But through a series of crazy wars with the other generals who used to be his friends, and the eventual death of Alex Jr., that was the kid's name, Ptolemy, along with Cassander, Lysimachus, Seleucus, and all the other bros, named themselves rulers of their regions, and the Empire of Alexander was officially dissolved. Some people like to call these wars Alexander's Funeral Games, which, that's a good thing to name it. Love that. Now, I don't have enough time to get into all the civil wars between the former bro club, but I will what I will tell you about is how these guys basically played a game that I like to call Who Can Bury Alexander First? Now, it was tradition in Macedonia, where all these guys were from, that Macedonian kings would bury their predecessor in order to make their succession to the throne legitimate. Now, although these guys had agreed to just be placeholders until Alex Jr. came of age, they were big fat fucking liars, and almost immediately each of them tried to bury Alexander before the other one could. Now, one of Alexander's former generals, whose name I'm probably going to butcher, but I think it's Perdiccas? Something like that. Perdiccas decided he wanted to bury Alexander in Macedon, so he loaded up Alexander's very dead body and started making his way back to Greece from the Middle East. However, our guy Ptolemy was like, not so fast, and stole Alexander's body while Perdiccas was passing through Syria and skirted down to Memphis in Egypt, where he quickly had it buried. Now, Alexander would later be moved to a specially constructed temple in the new Egyptian capital of Alexandria, after, you know, Ptolemy got all settled in Egypt. Now, Ptolemy would not officially become pharaoh of this new dynasty until Arsinoe was about 10 or so years old. However, Ptolemy still acted like pharaoh regardless of official titles and wars and shit. And in order to be pharaoh, you need to have a lot of wives, or at the very least, mistresses to give you children. Now, Arsinoe has a lot of stepmoms and siblings, so let's just run through them before we get to her mommy. Now, one of Ptolemy's first major relationships was with this woman named Thais, who was a, I'm gonna butcher this pronunciation, Hetaira. A Hetaira was a woman who would travel with a Greek camp, and was basically like a geisha. They kind of like served as like high-value prostitutes. Now, Thais was the lady who convinced Ptolemy to burn the city of Persepolis to the ground one night when he was drunk, so she sounds like she was a hoot. Thais ends up being the mom of three of Arsinoe's half-siblings, Logis, Leontiscus, and, oh god, these Greek names. You know, like I said, love Greek names, I can't pronounce them. And Ierone? Something like that. Then, after Thais, during the Susa weddings, which was basically the one day Alexander the Great decided his entire army was going to get a hot Persian wife. You get a wife, everyone gets a hot Persian wife. Anyway, Ptolemy picks up his second wife at the Susa weddings. She is a noble woman named Artacama. They have no kids together. And then Ptolemy's third wife, he marries in the middle of all those civil wars he's having, and she's actually a Macedonian woman, Greek Macedonian woman named Eurydice. She's the sister of one of Ptolemy's rivals, Cassander, who you may remember from my Roxanne episode because he killed Alexander the Great's mom, and kind of Roxanna and kind of Alex Jr. Basically, this marriage is an attempt to make peace in some ways between all these warring factions in the former empire of Alexander. Now, Ptolemy and Eurydice had three sons who were Arsinoe's half-brothers. First, Ptolemy, of course, Milager, Argaeos, I think, and then two half-sisters named Ptolemais, which is just a female version of Ptolemy, I guess, and Lysandra. And last but certainly not least, we finally come to Arsinoe's mother, Berenice, who, despite not being a politically advantageous match for Ptolemy because of her father's minor noble blood, she clearly caught Ptolemy's eye. Now, Berenice came over to Egypt as a lady-in-waiting to Eurydice, who she's related to somehow. It's not really clear on the family relationship because I saw two things. One thing said they were cousins, but another thing I saw was that that Berenice was the granddaughter of Cassander on her mother's side, which would make Eurydice her great aunt and not her cousin. Maybe they were both. I don't know. That's not the point. The point is that Berenice rocks up into Egypt as a widowed mother of three, by the way, and charms the pants off, or maybe the toga, off Papa Ptolemy, and next thing you know, they are married and they have Arsinoe. Philotero, which is Arsinoe's full sister. And guess what? Another son, also named Ptolemy, despite the fact that Papa Ptolemy already had one of those, but we'll differentiate all the Ptolemies later. There's a lot of them. You don't need to remember most of these siblings that I've mentioned, because, like, out of, like, the 12 or so siblings that Arsinoe had, only, like, two of them are, like, massively important to this story. So, like, you know, you can just block out most of them in your head. In terms of Arsinoe's education, we don't really know much, and by don't know much, we literally don't know anything about her childhood. However, we can make some educated guesses, about her education and childhood, based on her father's love of reading, and the education of her brothers, and the attitude that Egyptians had towards female education. For one thing, we know that Arsinoe's dad loved to read. After all, he built the Library of Alexandria, for God's sake, so we can assume that his children being educated would be important to him, even the girls. Now, we know for sure that Arsinoe's brothers got all the fancy Greek tutors who taught them philosophy, history, mathematics, literature, all that good stuff. When Arsinoe is an adult, she corresponds with a lot of philosophers, so I would naturally assume she sat in on her brother's classes, or even got the same world-class Greek education that her brothers received. Lastly, the Egyptians had a very positive outlook on women's education, despite the fact that the Ptolemy family were outsiders, they were trying to integrate themselves, so it would make sense to me that one of the first steps to that process would be to educate the royal daughters of the new pharaoh in the Egyptian way, which I think is a win for, you know, Arsinoe either way, you know? In terms of looks, we don't really have any descriptions of her, but we do have several busts and coins made in her likeness, but, you know, those can be misleading in terms of what she might have looked like, because some were made in a Greek style, others in Egyptian style. Me personally, I imagine her resembling our girl Cleopatra. After all, they are family. I mean, Cleopatra isn't directly descended from Arsinoe, but, like, they're related, you know? So I imagine this, like, girl with olive-toned skin, brown eyes, dark black or brown hair, pretty much what you expect someone from the Mediterranean to look like. Not to mention, she, like Cleopatra, probably had a big nose to contend with, but despite mainstream beauty standards being against her, I would assume she was considered quite beautiful. I don't see why not. Now that we have properly set up our background information, with Ptolemy being quite a lot and Berenice being a smoke show, let's get into what Arsinoe's childhood might have looked like, as well as her first marriage. So, most of Arsinoe's childhood was intense, to say the least, because it's not the typical royal upbringing where you, your mom, and your siblings have a guarantee of security in your position as royals. Now, like I've already said, Papa Ptolemy had multiple wives. Hypothetically, none of them was more important than the other. And with no defined pecking order, there was a lot of rivalry between the wives to ensure that that particular wife and her children with Ptolemy were in favor, because any of those kids could become pharaoh one day. They each had a very equal opportunity. Now, for a good chunk of Arsinoe's childhood, her stepmom, Eurydice, was in Ptolemy's favor. She was the favorite, which makes sense since she was a political match and Papa Ptolemy married her to create political ties with Cassander and his ultra-powerful dad, who is currently running his homeland of Macedon because he murdered Elias Jr. and Roxanne of Bactria and Olympias, but that's a story for another day. It seems almost assured, because of Eurydice's powerful connections, that her son, also named Ptolemy, was going to be the next pharaoh. But that was until Arsinoe's mom, Berenice, starts getting more and more favor with Papa Ptolemy, which also makes sense considering the dynamics. I mean, like I said, Berenice did not have a ton going on for her in terms of her dad's bloodline. Like, he was a really minor nobleman. And her mom's bloodline doesn't really count for much since, you know, it's her mom's side, like, who the fuck cares about that side? So, there was no reason for Papa Ptolemy to actually want to marry her other than for love. So, Ptolemy was obviously more likely to give favor to the kids and the wife he married out of love rather than politics, no matter how important Eurydice's family was to his, you know, political security. Now, because of Arsinoe's more heightened status later in life, more in her teens, it increased her marriage prospects very suddenly. Also, it ensured that she was going to be married off as soon as possible to help secure alliances, and when Arsinoe was about 15 or 16, that time finally came. Now, I don't know if I'm crazy, but it seems like it would be a stupid idea to marry your child to a really old guy who already has enough heirs because it could, oh, I don't know, lead to your child and grandchildren being killed. I mean, out of all the probably age-appropriate suitors for Arsinoe's hand, Papa Ptolemy chose to make an alliance with the king of Thrace, this ancient geriatric guy named Lysimachus. So, let's get to know Arsinoe's new grandpa, husband, and what he was up to for the last, oh, I don't know, 50 or so years Arsinoe wasn't alive. So, Lysimachus and Arsinoe's dad have a lot in common. In fact, they knew each other well back in the good old Alexander the Great days. Lysimachus was born into a prominent Macedonian family, although his ethnicity was technically Thessalian, which is south of Macedon, in the north of Greece. Lysimachus joined in with Alexander and all his best bros, and served alongside Papa Ptolemy as one of Alexander's bodyguards, and did some, like, pretty badass, like, fighting shit in India. Eventually, when the empire went kaput, he ended up getting control of Thrace, which is in northern Greece and includes some parts of Bulgaria these days. Now, the reason for the alliance in the first place was because Papa Ptolemy and Lysimachus thought their old buddy Seleucus, who was ruling Persia at the time, was getting a little too big for his britches, or maybe his toga, and needed to be taught a lesson. Also, weird side note, Lysimachus had a wife named Amestris, who was related to the Persian royal family, and she left his ass because Lysimachus had conquered her kingdom, and she was pissed about being forced to marry him. Not important to Arsinoe's story at all, I just thought it was funny that he had a wife that divorced him and, like, peaced the fuck out. Like, she was like, I'm going home, bye, I fucking hate you. Anyway. Well, I'm sure Arsinoe, like many ancient girls, had expected to get married as a teenager for political reasons. I highly doubt she had expected to get married to a guy who was old enough to need in-home care or a hospice soon. But it doesn't matter what she thinks, because politics is more important. So at just 16 or so, she's put on a ship and sails straight to Thrace to be married. Now, we don't know anything about their wedding. I couldn't find anything about ancient Macedonian wedding traditions. It's only, like, modern ones. But I'm sure Arsinoe looked absolutely fabu, and Lysimachus was probably there. I can't tell you a ton about the relationship either, because we don't have really obvious instances of affection in the marriage. After all, it was a business arrangement for everyone involved. Arsinoe had the opportunity to bear Lysimachus' children, influence the court over other wives like her mom had, and Lysimachus got a friend in Papa Ptolemy, so, you know, it was a win-win for everyone except for maybe Arsinoe in some ways. Now, there is some evidence that they at least liked each other. I mean, Lysimachus named a city after her. I guess that's something. Also, they had three sons together, so I can see some affection there. I mean, at least three times. Now, guys, I bet you can't guess what Arsinoe named her first son with Lysimachus. I'm going to give you guys a second. Just think. What would Arsinoe name her first son with Lysimachus? I bet you can't guess. She named the goddamn kid fucking Ptolemy. Fuck. I forgot how sick I was of all the Ptolemies when we did the Cleopatra episode. Fuck. I hate the name Ptolemy. I have a deep-seated hate towards the name Ptolemy because of the fucking Ptolemies. Fuck. Don't worry. I'll make sure you guys know which one of these fuckers I'm talking about when I make reference to them. I'm gonna give them nicknames like I gave Papa Ptolemy to help out. Anyway, after Ptolemy the Millionth, Arsinoe had her son Lysimachus Jr., and last but certainly not least, they had little Philip. We don't have much evidence that Arsinoe was influential in the Thracian court, but what we do have shows that she was an extraordinary queen. A village in Thrace had an inscription made praising her abilities and how awesome she was, which I think tells us a lot about her character and how she was really settling in to be a queen, like she was bred for this. Now, for the most part, I think she was probably focused on keeping her head down in these early years and staying as an advocate for her kids when she could, even if they wouldn't succeed for the to the throne, she could still make sure that they had an important place in court. Especially the fact that her husband had older sons, so there's very little chance of her kids becoming king, but put a pin in that thought. Anyway, back to some drama within Arsinoe's family. Two major things are happening around the time she gives birth to her last son. Now, the first thing is that Arsinoe is about to get a stepdaughter-in-law, and surprise, it's her half-sister Lysandra. Yeah, Lysander is about to marry Arsinoe's stepson, Agathocles, who kind of hates her. Well, I don't know if Lysander and Arsinoe hate each other because of, like, their moms competing. They are now competing again to stay in favor with Lysimachus. One is a daughter-in-law and one is a wife. Meanwhile, Papa Ptolemy decides he is officially going to name an heir, and bad news for Arsinoe's stepmom, Eurydice, because her son, Ptolemy, who I like to call Ptolemy Ka-chow, I'll explain that later. Ptolemy Ka-chow gets passed over for Arsinoe's full brother, Ptolemy II. And this pissed off Ptolemy Ka-chow so much. Like, he was so angry. He was so sure that he was going to get to be pharaoh after his dad. So he fucks off out of Egypt, shows up in Lysimachus' court, and is like, "Hey, sister Lysandra. Hey, sister Arsinoe. It's me." Now, put a pin in Ptolemy Ka-chow and Arsinoe, because we have bigger fish to fry first. Now, very suddenly, Agathocles, Arsinoe's stepson, and also brother-in-law, two ways, he dies. And many sources involve Arsinoe in having something to do with his death. Now, some accuse her of slipping poison in his food, or, you know, whispering in her husband's ears and convincing him to off his son, which I think are very misogynistic statements, and seem to happen every single time an ancient woman has, like, a rival die around her. Like, they don't always do it, guys. Like, it's not always their fault. Like, don't you guys just love it when history accuses women of slipping poison into people's food, like, all the time? Anyway, shit goes down when Agathocles dies. Arsinoe's sister, Lysandra, decides to get the fuck out of Thrace and go to the Persian Empire for her protection because she has kids. And she shows up in her dad's old buddy's kingdom, Seleucus, and she's like, "Hey, Seleucus, would you go to war with my father-in-law after my my husband died?" And Seleucus, surprisingly, is like, "No fucking problem, babe. I can do that for you," and declares war. Now, this war ends pretty badly for Arsinoe because her grandpa of a husband ends up dying at the Battle of Corpedium, ending their roughly 20-year marriage. And after that, everything fucking, like, shit hit the fan in Thrace, because there was no clear successor, Lysimachus didn't, like, name an heir, and everyone was fighting for the scraps of Thrace. Now, Arsinoe escapes the capital, and apparently the story goes that she swapped clothes with one of her maids and put her in a royal litter, which is, like, you know, those boxes that, like, servants, like, pick up and you, like, sit in, and she apparently put the maid in the royal litter and sent her off as Arsinoe ran through the streets. And apparently that maid was stabbed to death and Arsinoe gets away, which again sounds like something that someone made up to make her look like a horrible, selfish bitch. So I don't think she did that. I think she probably did have, like, a very, like, you know, sneaky way of getting out of the city, but, like, I doubt she, like, you know, sent one of her maids to get stabbed to death. Anyway, while Seleucus is conquering, he happens to have company in Arsinoe's half-brother, Ptolemy Ka-chow, who is still pissed off that his dad passed him over for other Ptolemy, and he is not willing to share the spoils of Thrace with Seleucus. So, what Ptolemy Ka-chow decides to do is he decides to stab Seleucus in the back, which gets him the nickname Thunderbolt, which is why I call him Ka-chow, like Lightning McQueen. Now, Ptolemy Ka-chow manages to win over Seleucus's troops after, like, literally murdering their leader, and somehow ends up making peace with Seleucus's sons, which is, like, crazy. Like, did they hate their dad or something? Because, like, guys, that guy just murdered your dad and you're just, like, fine with it. Like, they were able to make peace with him, like, so easily. Anyway, after Ptolemy Ka-chow manages to somehow bamboozle the entire Persian Empire, he kind of claims Thrace for himself, but there's kind of one more obstacle in his way, and that's Arsinoe and her kids, who still have a very obvious claim on the Thracian throne. Now, ever since Lysimachus croaked, life has not been peachy for Arsinoe. She and her three sons have been fighting for territory, have had to fortify cities and then run away from them against Seleucus's troops and eventually Ptolemy Ka-chow's troops. It's been kind of a mess for Arsinoe the last couple of months. But what happens next, I doubt even Arsinoe could have seen this coming. Now, Tony Kachow, this guy who is known for his cunning and strength in battle that gave him the nickname Thunderbolt, decides to saunter up to the city that Arsinoe is hiding in from him. And instead of, you know, threatening her, going in there and murdering her, he was like, hey, wanna get married? Now, I know what you're thinking, guys. Hey, Aiden, aren't these two literally half-siblings? They have the same dad, right? And you would be correct. But they were also Egyptian by right of conquest, and Egyptian royals have married brother to sister for, like, thousands of years. So this wouldn't have been odd in Egypt, but I'm sure it turned heads in Macedonia and Thrace. So what exactly was the mutual benefit of Ptolemy Kachow being like, hey, sis, wanna get married? Which I can hear you asking me through the podcasting voice. I can hear all of you guys. I mean, obviously, neither of them are wanting to do this because they suddenly realize they have some weird incestuous feelings for each other. No, my friends, this is an incestuous business relationship. So Arsinoe gets to be queen, has no other queens to oppose her because her brother husband swears that he won't take any wives and that her sons can succeed him on the throne. Ptolemy Kachow gets a kingdom of his own separate from Egypt by marrying the widow of Lysimachus, and he attaches himself to the legacy of Lysimachus, which is huge, by the way. I may not have liked the old bastard, but he was an impressive guy. Now, Ptolemy Kachow pulls out all the stops for Arsinoe for them to get married. He publicly puts a diadem on her head, which is like a cute little tiara, and hails her Regina, or Queen. They have this big festival to celebrate their wedding and the joining of their families, which is the same family, but whatever. And Arsinoe, as a sign of good faith, sends her two youngest sons, Lysimachus Jr. and Philip, to greet their new stepfather slash uncle outside the city. All seems to be going well until Lysimachus Jr. and Philip are pulled into a tent and promptly murdered. Ptolemy Kachow was a lying bastard. He tricked Arsinoe into marriage in order to take out two of her sons. So the minute that happens, she runs away from her brother husband to hide with her only remaining child, little Ptolemy. Now, we won't see Ptolemy Kachow again in this story. He came in as fast as he's about to leave, so let me tell you how he dies, because it's pretty ironic for a guy who made a career out of stabbing people like a fucking maniac, like in a Scream movie, I don't know. So basically, a group of Gauls, which is like people from the north, they're Celtic peoples from like France and shit, decided to invade Macedon, and instead of waiting for reinforcements, Mr. Kachow over here headed into battle, was wounded and captured by the Gauls, who promptly murdered him and mounted his head on a spear and carried it around on a battlefield. What a loser. Like, he had done so much shitty stuff to win the throne of Thrace, and he got murdered by Gauls because he was too fucking proud to wait for reinforcements. What an idiot. I'm glad he's dead. Like, that fucking psychopath murderer stabbing people left and right, he deserved to get decapitated and paraded around by Gauls from the north. And that ends the story of Ptolemy Kachow. He didn't win the Piston Cup. He won death, is what he won. Anyway, moving on from the lightning bolt, Arsinoe seeks refuge with her oldest son, little Ptolemy, who's the last in her small brood of children, and as a thank you gift to him for, you know, sheltering her like the good son he was, she built the largest round building in the Greek world, which I'm sure is a very nice way to tell your son, thank you for protecting me from my brother husband after he tried to murder me and murdered your brothers. After failing to promote her son's claim to the Thracian throne after Ptolemy Kachow's death, she decided to seek refuge in Egypt sometime between 280 BC and 276 BC. Now, usually after suffering the kind of shit that Arsinoe has been through, most people would probably retire from the politics game and slink back into doing shit like, I don't know, what did Greek slash Egyptian women do? Weave or something? I don't know. But not Arsinoe. Oh, no, no. Not Arsinoe, because she was about to make the greatest comeback of all time. So, I'm not even going to sugarcoat this. Basically, Arsinoe rocks back up into Egypt, and very, very quickly things start happening in the court of her full-blooded brother, Ptolemy II. Now, first, Ptolemy II divorces his wife, who was also named Arsinoe, and was our Arsinoe's stepdaughter actually, because this other Arsinoe was one of Lysimachus's kids from, like, another marriage. Fucking hell, I really hate these family knots. I really wish they'd just branch out a bit. Why are stepdaughters marrying brothers? I don't know. Anyway, other Arsinoe gets accused of trying to assassinate Ptolemy II, and she is sent away in exile for the rest of her conceivable life. And then very conveniently, our Arsinoe marries Ptolemy II and becomes his queen. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Not only has Arsinoe married her half-brother in this episode, which is fucking bad enough, she has now married her full brother. These two have the same fucking parents. They grew up together. I swear, this family is just a Habsburg on fucking steroids. Oh my god. See, I'm coughing because this is so gross. Now, as I said before, the Egyptians would not have blinked an eye at this news. They were so used to pharaohs of old marrying brother to sister for thousands of years. But the Greeks would have been like, yo, what in the sweet home Alabama are y'all doing over there? Now, much like her marriage with her other brother, this was about 90% of business arrangement on both sides that gave Arsinoe the security that she was looking for, and it gave Ptolemy II a competent partner that he could rule with and trust, because Arsinoe had been a queen before. She had been trained in this shit. Not to mention, in this cave, Ptolemy II does not have to deal with a foreign country's interests to have a queen, since, you know, this queen is his sister and she's from here. So basically, they're locking the gates and, you know, insulating with their own. Also, unfortunately for the first Arsinoe, she didn't get to see her kids that she had with Ptolemy II ever again, and our Arsinoe officially acknowledged. Was officially acknowledged as the mother of all his kids with his first wife, which must have been awkward for everyone, including the kids. Like, hi, new Arsinoe. You're not our biological mother, but you have the same name as her. You're also our aunt, which is really weird. Where's our mom? I bet they asked her. And she'd be like, I'm right here. My name's Arsinoe, too. Anyway. Now, the information we have is foggy, but one thing I can tell you is that Egypt loved Arsinoe. Like, crazy. She was a very popular queen. The Egyptian public is just eating up this whole brother-sister power couple thing, and Arsinoe is kind of setting the precedent for how a Ptolemaic queen should hold herself and should be and should act. Now, she made herself officially involved with Egypt's foreign policy and military action when she traveled with her brother husband to Hierapolis to inspect some military defenses. She also had her name signed alongside Ptolemy II on a handful of important decrees from the palace, which shows her influence and that, like, Ptolemy II actually cares about her opinion and, like, wants her backing when he passes laws. Ports are named after her, poems are written in her honor, and Ptolemy transformed the barter economy of Egypt by introducing their coinage, making the city that their father founded, Alexandria, an incredibly important economic powerhouse in the Mediterranean. Not to mention, she and her brother kind of started a whole, like, demigod cult around their marriage, as was common with, like, Egyptians who married brother to sister. The Egyptians did that with their pharaohs. They made, like, cults around them. The Greeks were not used to that, so they took advantage of, like, the Egyptian, like, policy of making cults around, like, their pharaohs' marriages. At the city of Philae, at the temple of Isis, Arsinoe herself was installed as, like, this resident goddess. In fact, every temple ends up with symbols of Arsinoe in them at this time, alongside the local god or goddess. Cults to Arsinoe crop up in Greece and Egypt, where they pray for her and, you know, dedicate priests and rituals and shit. These cults turn her literally into a living goddess in front of them, and she reveled in that power and used it very wisely, unlike I think some people would be. When having cults dedicated to them, maybe like Paul Atreides, for example. For Arsinoe, image is everything, and she ensures that her image and her power are felt everywhere in the country and even in Greece. She gives money to religious projects, pays for shrines, patronizes various religious cults that, like, don't have to do with her, sponsors elaborate festivals that make the locals so happy that they don't give a shit about what the Ptolemies do. Also, fun fact that I learned from the Explores podcast, Arsinoe is the Ptolemaic woman that is featured the most in poetry, like, during the whole dynasty, like, even more than Cleopatra. Like, that's crazy, right? Like, Arsinoe is also the first Ptolemaic queen to have her own, like, signature ruler look, which, like, makes her really easily identifiable in paintings and shit, apparently. Like, I didn't know that. Like, that's so cool. The best way you can recognize her is that she wore this, like, new type of crown that I'm assuming that she probably invented. I'm not sure about that. But it looks like she's wearing the red crown of Lower Egypt, but it has, like, these two, like, plumes, I guess, like, feathers, as worn by Nefertari. You've got cow horns and ram's horns, a symbol of Alexander the Great and of the god Amun-Ra, and a big old solar disk, which is, like, you know, a throwback to Egypt's beginning. So she had this, like, really smart blending of all the different symbols that would matter to her and her family in order to show her power. She's like, I, you know, I'm connected to Lower Egypt, I'm a queen of Egypt, but also don't forget, I'm connected to Alexander the Great, and also a big old solar disk. You guys like the sun, right? Not to mention she was the first Ptolemaic woman to go on a coin at all. Like, fucking good for her. Like, setting the standard. You know you're doing well when they want to put you on coinage and that coinage stays in circulation well after you're dead. Like, I think that's a recognition of you doing really well. Now, we are not 100% sure when Arsinoe died, but it's believed she passed away in Alexandria in 268 BC at the age of 50. Now, like I said before, she was highly revered both in life and in death, and her brother husband continued to sign documents in both of their names even after she died. He never married again, although he had mistresses, as, you know, most pharaohs and kings in general do, but I guess no one could compare to his sister. Now, before we talk about her legacy, let us briefly discuss about what happened to her last remaining son, little Ptolemy. Now, while I haven't mentioned him in a bit at this point, he was very much alive while his mother ruled in Egypt, although we don't have any records of what he was doing during the time between his mother's bid for his place on the Thracian throne and his mother's death. We have a lot more activity from him after his mom died. Now, not too long after Arsinoe dies, her brother husband makes another boy named Ptolemy his co-regent. And while one might think, oh hey, Ptolemy II had a son with his first wife, also named Ptolemy, it was probably that kid, some people believe it was actually little Ptolemy who was trying to help his uncle, stepdad, out and become his co-ruler. Because Ptolemy II was getting pretty old by the time Arsinoe passed away. Now, some say that little Ptolemy played an active role in the military and politics for his uncle, and that he may have been engaged to one of the pharaoh's daughters at one point, because some people think that he was intended to be Ptolemy II's successor, but that was not to happen, as little Ptolemy was like, I'm kind of sick of waiting for, well, any throne, and he staged a rebellion that his uncle later forgave. Somehow, like, these people are so forgiving for rebellion, and made little Ptolemy the king of Telemesis, which is a city in modern Turkey. I apologize if I pronounced that wrong, but it looks like Telemesis. It was here where little Ptolemy's son Lysimachus and Epigonus of Telemesis would rule as kings and govern in partnership with their Egyptian cousins. So it ended up working out for little Ptolemy. I mean, he got to live, he got to be a king in the end, so good for him. Oh, getting on to legacy. I hate to say it, y'all, I really hate to say this, but Arsinoe walked so Cleopatra could run. I mean, without Arsinoe investing in the arts and creating all that propaganda, making herself a goddess, throwing fun parties, issuing coins, Cleopatra would not have had a pedestal to stand on. I am really glad to have learned about Arsinoe, like, genuinely. I mean, what a life to have led, and to presumably get a happy and peaceful ending where she died rich, happy, and powerful as Queen of Egypt is just, like, the cherry on top of her inventing the idea of being a Ptolemaic queen. That's awesome. Now, thank you guys so much for joining me on this episode. For those who can see the eclipse in North America, I hope you guys have fun watching it. Well, this will come out after it's happened, but I hope you guys have fun watching it on Monday when I'm recording this. And I will see you guys in 2 weeks with the next episode. Goodbye!
Hey guys, thanks for listening. If you have any suggestions for topics, you can just DM me on Twitter at LongMaySheRain2. The N at the end of rain is replaced with a 2 instead. I'm also available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Anchor, and like a whole bunch of other stuff. Don't forget to rate and review this podcast on all those platforms. It really actually does help the show so much, and it will help me grow my audience. So I would absolutely appreciate it if you guys could do that. All right, bye.